Good morning. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, it's the first Friday in July. We'll hear this month's Nature's Almanac, letting us know what's happening in the natural world. After that, we'll hear from Martha Luachamin. She won the Democratic primary race in the Boulder County Commissioner District 2 election this week. If she's successful in the general election in November, she would be the first person of colour elected to serve on the Boulder County Board of Commissioners. Then on Trends Diary, a collaboration between KGNU and the Community Foundation of Boulder County, we'll hear from Tim Waters, Longmont City Council member who has launched the Longmont Voices and Vision Project. At 8:30, Kathy Partridge is your host for Connections, and her guest today is Leilani Henry, a former Connections host. This morning she'll talk about her father, the first African-American to step foot in the Antarctic. Leilani is writing a book about him. We'll hear all about it. It's called We Are All Antarctica. But first we'll begin with the latest local headlines. On Thursday, Governor Jared Polis created a board that will evaluate proposed name changes for geographic and public places. In a statement, Polis said that the new board will play a critical role in the ongoing celebration of Colorado history through place names, but will ensure that we have inclusivity and transparency around the naming process. The Denver Post reports that 14 petitions are pending to rename places in Colorado, including Mount Evans, Redskin Mountain, and Squaw Mountain. Mount Evans was named after John Evans, who was forced to resign as territorial governor because of the Sand Creek Massacre. The federal authority in charge of approving renaming requests is the U.S. Geographic Naming Board. A spokesperson for the board says renaming areas requires a lot of work and detailed proposals that include a new name and discussion with tribes and other affected communities. Also on Thursday, Governor Polis vetoed a bill that had been approved by lawmakers in an effort to tackle opioid addiction. The bill would have limited opioid prescriptions in an attempt to cut down on future addiction and overdose cases. It would do this by directing patients away from the drugs and toward alternate treatments, and it would mandate that insurance companies cover a half dozen annual visits for each physical therapy, acupuncture, occupational therapy, and chiropractic visit. At a press conference on Thursday, Polis said while he appreciated elements of the bill, he would not sign anything that might increase insurance premiums. He said that health insurance carriers had estimated the bill would add between $22 million to $38 million to the cost of premiums. This is the first bill that Governor Polis has vetoed in 2020. Ahead of the July 4th weekend, managers of local parks and open space areas are reminding people to wear face masks and practice social distancing when on trails. Other managers have closed areas due to concerns about the spread of the coronavirus. Boulder County is reminding people that the face covering ordinance in the county has been extended. People are asked to bring a face covering with them to open space properties and to wear them at the trailheads when passing others, and any time that it's not possible to keep a safe 6 foot distance from anyone not residing in the same household. Face coverings are not necessary when on the trail and away from other people, and county officials say that it is acceptable to lower them for comfort, but that you must have them ready to cover a mouth and nose when encountering other visitors. Other open space areas in the Front Range will be closed this weekend due to overuse. As Steve Miller reports, access to Clear Creek and Golden has been closed for the holiday weekend due to COVID-19 fears.
All access points to the creek have been fenced off, and side streets near the creek have been blocked to all non-local traffic. The trail alongside the creek will remain open, but the City of Golden is requiring masks to be worn not only at the creek, but on all city property. According to City Manager Jason Slowinski, the decision was made after crowds of people on Clear Creek last weekend were seen not using social distancing and very few wearing masks. With Colorado's coronavirus caseload going up, city officials were concerned that visitors from neighboring states that have even faster increasing cases would bring infections to Golden. Clear Creek will remain closed until further notice. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
In today's weather, warm temperatures, highs close to 90 degrees, but a chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon. Tomorrow, similar temperatures with an increased chance of afternoon showers.
It's July. What's happening in the natural world? Here are Boulder County naturalist Steve Jones and Scott Siebers.
We're back in East Boulder Community Marsh here along South Boulder Creek, just north of South Boulder Road. It's about a half hour after sunrise. We're watching dozens and dozens of displaying red-winged blackbirds. They're standing on top of these swaying cattails, and the cattails are just greening up. Red wings are going to be standing on top of the dead cattails and some on top of green cattails. The cool thing about the red wings is the display they make when they're calling. Scott, can you describe that?
As they sing, they throw their wings forward and show their red epaulets, which are their shoulder patches. They really display them quite nicely and forcefully as the males puff up and throw their voice forward.
And they're really competitive. Here's one with his epaulets just flashing at us. And the nests are only separated by maybe 20 yards or so. And each male is trying to maintain a territory. Here's one on the sign here, flashing his epaulets at us. It's really a lot of work to maintain those territories and keep the other males away.
There's even a few non-breeders sneaking into those territories.
And meanwhile, the females are looking for the best mate. They may pair up with one male, but then if they see a male who's a better performer or a better singer, they'll go off and mate with him.
Yeah.
So it's a really wild scene out here. And the nests are tucked in low. You're not going to see the nests. The young usually are fledging right about this time of year as you get into early or midsummer. In what I consider a cruel experiment, some scientists painted over the red epaulets on some wings of red winged blackbirds, and not surprisingly, they couldn't defend territories without those red epaulets. This is why I'm a naturalist and not a scientist.
Yeah.
I already knew that. Yeah. I didn't need to capture the birds and paint them with black paint.
Yeah.
You can tell by watching them that that's really important, the way they flare out their wings. But right in front of us, about 10 feet away, here's a red wing. Now let's listen to his song. Sort of a gurgling song.
He's pretty interested in us. Red-winged blackbird males are fierce defenders against predators, often relentlessly pursuing a hawk, even people, a jogger, and taking side swipes.
Yeah, I've been hit by one riding my bike.
Yeah.
On the Longmont Diagonal, hit me right in the back. Now, when they flare their wings, the red epaulets have yellow beneath them, so they're actually red and yellow. But we also have yellow-headed blackbirds in Boulder County, and they're fabulous birds. They need standing water under their cattails, or they can't defend their nests from predators. They're apparently just not as good as the red wings at chasing away raccoons and bull snakes and other predators. So they're really crowded and tight, and their song, they raise their yellow head in the air and twist it around and make this gurgling sound. And it reminds me of a strangulation victim crying out for help. It's really harsh.
Yes.
In contrast, the red wings actually are great singers. They don't have a complex song, but they can make so many sounds. The clucking sound you hear are the red wings. And then you hear this little chittering sound, and then they make that gurgling, bubbly song.
To reach these marshes east of the East Boulder Rec Center, you can come south on 55th Street from Baseline Road or north on 55th Street from South Boulder Road, park at the parking lot, and walk to the east along 55th Street, and the marshes are just on your right between us and Boulder Creek.
Steve Jones and Scott Siebers are friends and Boulder naturalists.
This week, Martha Luachamin won the Democratic primary in the Boulder County Commissioner District 2 race. If she wins in November's general election, she would be the first person of colour elected to the Board of Commissioners. She spoke to KGNU's Rosanna Longo about the historic nature of her candidacy and her victory in the primary election.
This is historic from a few different pieces, really, of my being a now a Democratic nominee for the Boulder County Dem Party for a county commissioner seat. And if people look at the history of county commissioner in our county, it's typically folks with a really different story. And to me, that's one of the most exciting pieces about this, because from the beginning, it's been about how do we include community voice in leadership? How do we include some of the work I've been doing around cultural brokers? What does that mean? The values that we bring to every seat that we're at, every position that we're at, all the jobs that we do. Changing this narrative, even on the candidate trail and the campaign trail and the candidate forums, it became more and more apparent by the language that is used about our Spanish-speaking community, about our Latinx community, about people of color, that we are still seen with a deficit lens. And so all of those reasons, it's so important to make sure that community members realize that we are also big contributors, that we are also working hard, that we are also in other jobs outside of just the typical narratives that are spoken about us. So yeah, it's an exciting opportunity.
How you're winning this election is a historic result.
There's several reasons why it's historic. It's really bringing community voice to the front of leadership. It's including people who otherwise are not being heard. I've been talking about this on the campaign trail. One of the main reasons that I started this race, particular outside of a reaction and a response and a tangible result to 2016, was also based on a young woman's voice who, in the work I was doing on flood recovery with the Resiliencia para Todos project, demanding that we speak for ourselves. And what does that mean as we build a pipeline? How can I open other doors for other young Latinas or other people of color, other Black members of our community or Indigenous community members to start seeing ourselves as the very critical roles that we play to do decision making from the very beginning? And that's why that leadership table is so important. That's why it's historic, because we have to, and I've been talking about this on the campaign trail, leadership has to look like us, because otherwise we're not going to come together. We'll continue to be outside in the perimeter, on the ground, doing the work, disconnected, an afterthought. If we're not at the table, and that's what this race is about, and that's why it's historic, because now we will be, from a community standpoint, part of the decision making, the planning, before the resources get allocated, to help with the transparency and accountability, because we have a different lens and a different experience about the community needs, but also a whole different way of collaborating and connecting with our nonprofits, with our community members. And we're seeing it again right now at Rosanna in COVID. We saw it in the mortgage crisis. We saw it in the flood. And so that's the piece of the history that you're asking about, is now we can change the narratives. That's one thing that's so important. We can change the way that our youth see themselves in the places of leadership. We can change the way that policies get made, because we'll be at the beginning of those processes.
Would you like to share struggles of the campaign? COVID-19 came and everything that we do now is virtual. So tell me, how is it that you were able to bring the community together to vote for you, but also to bring others that are not from the community to support you?
I filed for this race in November of 2018. And now I realize how important that truly was. I mean, there was a point, started in November 2018, and then I went through a 6-month intensive training on how to be specifically a woman candidate to run for any local office. But that training was really critical. And I was already out on the ground meeting new people, going to different community groups. And I'm already a volunteer. I'm already on local boards and national boards and things like that. But getting out into other places, that became even much more critical. Going to the process, when you talk about struggles, the typical process of even being a candidate, being selected to be a nominee for a party, like there's all kinds of barriers there. And so going through that signature process to get on the ballot at the beginning, that ended up being even more valuable in this race, because we were out knocking on doors in January and February. So when we shut the campaign down from person-to-person contact on March 12th, the petition signature date for the state was March 17th. We were done before that. We were done in February, but there were still campaigns campaigns that were trying to get signatures. What that meant was that all of the community events that I had been at for more than 12 months, specific about campaigning and meeting new people, was so important. The house parties we had over a year ago, just to meet people and talk to people and hear about community needs and make connections. Because then after March, you're right, we couldn't do that. And part of my personality and my leadership style is very person first person, and it might be cultura. It might be like just the way that we interact and the way that I feed off of seeing people and listening and hearing and communicating. There was a moment, Rosana, in the middle of the COVID, maybe at the beginning, where there was a moment of feeling like, okay, this is such a steep climb. One, to not be the established candidate. Two, to not know all the intricacies of the Democratic Party, and certainly not the Boulder County Democratic Party. But then when you put on COVID on top of that, there was a moment of like, maybe this is just too complex to try and bring people together virtually when I still don't have keys to certain rooms, if that makes sense. We still, I'm still considered an outsider to some folks in the community. And so as much work as we had already done, it did make some complications. Getting on the phone and talking with people, checking in with my volunteers about COVID and checking in with just voters, I had a conversation with a young woman who she said, oh my gosh, it's you, you're on the phone, and you're just like, I need that then. And I said, yeah, this is me. And she's like, don't give up, just keep going. And it was one of those, like, right at the right time. And she said, this is bigger than right now. And it was like, okay, that's the energy that I need. And you're right, this is bigger than just me. It's bigger than just right now. It's about building a pipeline. It's about the history you asked about, because this can't be the only Latina County Commissioner. This has to be the beginning of something totally new for Boulder County. And how can I help be part of influencing other local governments to really integrate with full communities so that all of our leadership teams are truly diverse instead of just talking about it?
Why do you think at this point we need to have diversity at all levels of leadership?
There's two pieces, and some of the data and the studies that show, for example, one of the main reasons that I went back to get my master's to be in a classroom was because the first time that I had a teacher who looked like me was at CU Boulder. That lack of representation really created a lot of questions for me. And I've seen it with my own students. And going back to the same topic of how does that help everybody, it was an amazing opportunity for me to work with my white students and give them the opportunity, because I would tell them, this might be the only time you ever have somebody in a role of authority, because that's the reality where we're at in this section of Colorado that looks like me, that has a story like me. Like, let's have candid conversations, let's learn from each other. And for my native Spanish speaking students, it was the same conversation of, hey, and we're all here together and we all are going to do work together. And I think it's, for me, there's a principle in that for full community. How do we work together? How do we get to know our neighbors? Some of the same lessons learned from being in a classroom and reminding the folks that our neighbors too want to be connected, want to participate. And sometimes we overlook that and we are not thinking about those different pieces. And so from a leadership standpoint, is all of our leadership representative? And so from a county commissioner standpoint, okay, what can we do right now as a county? We can set the precedent. We can start to influence. We can start to model and show departments what it means to have leadership and management in each department that represents the workforce, that represents our community members, so that then we can look over to our different cities and our different towns throughout the county. And by modeling, because I'm a strong believer in what is in our house, what do we need to do? And that's going to be in the Boulder County offices and departments. What can we do internally? And then we can go out and share what we're doing. That's going to be part of this real challenge, but huge opportunity to start growing diversity in leadership throughout the county.
Please tell me about the next step.
Once we get official results next week, it'll be official with all the last ballots, et cetera, received from overseas, et cetera. The next step is, as the Democratic nominee, there is a Republican nominee for this same seat. And so we will be on the November 3rd general election ballot. The significance of this moment right now is that we have broken down a barrier that we weren't sure if we'd be able to do. And yet I have a strong belief that community voice is so important. So it was easy to go back to that, but also realize that the same reason that community voice is so critical and the significance of this phrase is exactly that. Now it is even more urgent. Now it is even more critical when we talk about this rebuild after COVID, when we talk about the racial violence that's been happening in this country. And so to be able to be part of creating solutions for our county employees and our 330,000 county residents to be able to get to the Democratic nomination, to represent the Boulder County Dems and residents, to do more for everybody is significant. It's exciting.
I have been speaking with Marta Loachamin, who this week won the Democratic primary in the Boulder County Commissioner's District 2 race. She goes on to the general election in November, and if she wins then, she will be the first person of color elected to the Board of Commissioners. For KGNU, I am Rosana Longo.
It's time now for Trends Diary.
Time now for Trends Diary, where Boulder County residents of all ages share personal experiences that relate to a pressing community need. The focus for now is on our shared need to connect and solve problems, despite the increased isolation we're all experiencing during the COVID-19 pandemic. This project is brought to you in partnership with Community Foundation Boulder County.
Dear Trends Diary, my name is Tim Waters, and as a volunteer for Longmont Public Media, I initiated the Longmont Voices and Vision Project in the early stages of the COVID-19 pandemic. Longmont Public Media is the City of Longmont's public access television provider. As we learn our way through the COVID-19 pandemic, we find ourselves in the midst of what will likely be a transformational experience in human history. When we were celebrating the first year in a new decade, no one could have imagined the world in which we are now living. Looking back, there was sufficient evidence to conclude that we could have and should have been better prepared. A retrospective will inform lessons to be learned from the current crisis. I'll leave after action reviews to others. My interest is, number one, learning how Longmont residents were and are getting through the current pandemic. Number two, how they are staying connected to family and friends, even though they've been distanced socially and cannot be together physically. And three, assuming that life will be different on the other side of this crisis, what do residents want to see and experience in their new normal? Or what's their preferred future on the other side of the pandemic and the future they're willing to help create? I'm collecting answers to these questions through virtual interviews conducted as part of the Longmont Voices and Vision Project with Longmont Public Media as a sponsor. Responses to the third question suggest Longmonters will be drawn to a future that is more just, balanced, equitable, sustainable, healthy, shared, and connected. Because of the COVID-19 and how it altered life in 2020, the project contributors I've interviewed are more, not less, aspirational about their future. Anyone wanting to voice their vision and share their voice can be included in this project if they're willing to spend just 15 minutes with me, and they only need to contact me at t.waters@comcast.net. This is all on no budget, volunteer. So I need to find a volunteer or somebody who would charge me a minimum fee to create a searchable database. To have it searchable makes it way more useful for, a historical record. Because what I'd like to do is hand over to the local museum that archive. Here's your roster of participants in a decade or two or three or five from now, at least in Longmont, and I'm guessing this would be true in a lot of communities. It'll be the only video archive, real-time video archive of what was on the hearts and minds of Longmonters at a time that no one had ever experienced or could ever have imagined experiencing. And I just think to know, to get into their hearts and minds at that moment is a priceless experience for me.
Feeling inspired? Do you have your own story of making connections or solving problems during this time of physical isolation? Then visit www.commfound.org. Look for Trends Diary and share your experience with Community Foundation Boulder County. Your submission could wind up on these KGNU airwaves.
Thanks for listening to The Morning Magazine here at Community Radio KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran. Stay tuned for Connections.